Blog Talk Radio.
And now, welcome to Penn's Blog Post Radio with your hosts Jeff Lohman and Daniel Evans. And welcome to Penn's Blog Post Radio. I am
Daniel Evans.
And tonight's going to be kind of a crazy show. We got a lot to talk about, but I want to score last night first. Nashville, 3-1 over New Jersey, Winnipeg, 4-1 over Rangers. Montreal, 2 over the Penguins. San Jose, 5. Washington, 0. Florida Panthers, 4-1 over Carolina. 3-1 over Tampa Bay, 4-2 over Edmonton, in which Connor McDavid had his first goal. Vancouver, 3-0 over the Los Angeles Kings. I said Lakers there. St. Louis, 4, Calgary, 3. We're going to go to Dan with the schedule score update.
Good evening, folks. Score update says of right now. At the end of the first period, the Ottawa Senators are losing Columbus Blue Jackets 2-1. They're having pregame activities in Philadelphia for rivalry between Chicago and Philadelphia at 10 p.m. Boston will be playing at Colorado, and at 30 p.m. East, Arizona playing the Ducks of Anaheim.
All right. Okay, folks, here's what we got for tonight. All here, all in numbers. We are going to be talking about the Pittsburgh Penguins, obviously. A lot of topics tonight. We're going to talk a lot about what's going on with the Penguins positionally, talk about the game in Montreal. We're going to have a segment called Johnston versus Rutherford. We're going to talk about line changes, optionals, slow starts. Will a trade fix the Penguins? We got you covered every which way but loose. We're going to also talk a lot about Daniel Sprong. Maybe not a lot, but enough to at least suffice some people. Before we get into all of that, let's get into some NHL news and notes. Number one is probably the headline that Alexander Ovechkin was benched. The reason for benching is he seems to have not set his alarm at the appropriate time, 8:30 in the morning, and set it for 8:30 at night, and apparently missed practice the other morning. The game lost 5-0. Capitals have a rule that says if you miss practice or you're late, don't play. Don't know necessarily if I buy Ovechkin's excuse, but either way, Trotz seems to have everything in control in Washington, and that may be something to watch as we move forward here. Nick Backstrom for Washington obviously had successful surgery over the offseason. He's been cleared for contact, so he can be back in the lineup soon, which I think will help Alex Ovechkin in the long haul. Calgary Flames' Luma is out with a broken leg for foreseeable future that for Calgary, and that may some of their movements as far as trade. As we said, Connor, first half. Yay, Connor, that goal. Let's see what you do in 30 games. So, really, where I want to start, if everybody listened to, or at least read, what we said on our webpage, we have two commercials. Want everybody to kind of take a listen to it. Yeah, we're kind of poking fun at the Penguins. But I think it's pretty funny. So we'll start with the first one. Basically, Sidney Crosby's commercial. And then we're going to go to the Mike Johnson commercial. So listen in.
How would you like to play professional hockey? How would you like to play for the Pittsburgh Penguins? Would you like to make 7 figures? Would you like to be like Sidney Crosby? How would you like to just not go to practice whenever you didn't feel like you needed to? If that's for you, go to www.nhl.com/Pittsburgh Penguins and fill out an application to be the newest member of your Pittsburgh Penguins hockey team.
Okay, now some may say that that's a little cruel and that's kind of a cheap shot. So we will accept that here at Penn's Blog Post Radio. But this next one, I think, really, what do you think, Dan? Because you know what this one is.
Oh, yeah.
All right. So everybody sit tight. This is the Mike Johnston commercial.
Have you ever wanted to coach in the NHL? Have you ever wanted to be Mike Johnston? Well, here at the Mike Johnston Plastic Surgery Center for Facial Reconstruction, you too can also have that blank stare on your face throughout 60 minutes of great NHL hockey. For all services and needs, contact 412-634-4444 and ask to get the Johnstonator.
What do you think? Now, some people may say, wow, that's a little off, Jeff. That's kind of cruel. But you know what? Mike Johnston just... look on it. And this dude's awesome. I mean, last night, for those people who didn't see the game last night, there was a part where Tockett was literally showing a lot of... He was very animated, good way of putting it. And here's Johnston with this stone cold piece, like, okay, what do I do? Now, don't get me wrong. As much as I respect the organization, I realize that, you know, sometimes it takes time to think out. But a head coach needs to be able to scout, know when something's wrong, and correct it. In my opinion, I don't know if you can do it or not.
You know what I think, Dan?
I met him 15 years ago. I was told there was nothing left. No reason, no conscience, no understanding, and even the most rudimentary sense of life or death, of
Mike Johnston.
Good or evil, right or wrong. I met this 6-year-old child with this blank, pale, emotionless face. And
that is definitely Mike Johnston.
Yeah. But I don't think Mike Johnston, I don't think Mike is his version of Mike is going to come out with a hack and
off. All right, so if anybody wants to call in and discuss the Pittsburgh Penguins' woes and systematic problems, feel free to call in. 1216. You can talk with me and Dan about anything you want. So let's get into it. The Penguins lost to the Montreal Canadiens 3-2. Just without getting into stats, because we're going to go there, but I think today. Can't take much from that game. I think that the Penguins scoring 2 goals is probably good for them because they're at least starting to score. But we're still seeing the same old problems present themselves. Now, 0-3, something to seriously worry about? Yes. Is it a situation where the Pittsburgh Penguins are not going to be? No. Because let's remind everybody, 0-3 is not great, but it could also be a lot worse. And I think that definitely the Ottawa game and the Toronto game coming up in the next few days are going to be huge. And I think the Penguins go 0-5, say, then we're going to start talking about some big problems. But does that mean Johnston's on the hot seat? Absolutely. But let's get to the game from the other night. Dan, did you see anything from the game the other night that stuck out to you anyway as getting better?
I saw a few things, but to be totally honest, the thing that's missing the most, and it's something that I'm beating with a dead horse night after night, day after day, what is missing is a full 60. Now, Coach Johnston said in the media last night after the game that, well, I thought we played for 80% of the game. Excuse me? 80%? No. Hell no. There were some good things that came out of it. Bo Bennett's first goal of the season. Yes, Crosby got his first shot on goal. And yes, Letang got his first goal of the season. But this is still symptomatic of a system that just doesn't work. And I know that it takes time to develop chemistry. But after a while, the excuses are going to fall on deaf ears. Especially when it comes to management and ownership. What are you going to do? Sit there and tell me, well, I'm trying my best, but, you know, 0-3, 0-4, 0-5 is the best I can do right now, but at least we're not getting blown out. People don't want to hear excuses. Eventually, they want to hear results and see them.
directly to how well this team is going to be. But more specifically, like literally, in that Montreal game, what were a couple of things that you saw? I mean, tell me one thing you saw that you thought was good, and tell me something you saw that you thought was bad.
I thought Bennett's breakaway goal was good, but what I found that was bad, yet again, was the dreaded blue line. RD just still has a case of stage fright when it comes to defending the blue line. Instead, they fall back. And the lack of speed of Skinderian hurts like crazy. You've got, in order to build up this team and win games, you have to go back to basics, and this team still hasn't gotten back to basics.
And conversely, looking at the stats for a second, because stats always don't tell the story, and I'm really big on saying that. You got to look at the stats from this game. It's a little interesting, and it's if you didn't watch the game, you would have sworn that this game was extremely close the entire time, and I don't think it was. I don't think that's the case. As far as shots, Pittsburgh 33 to Montreal's 30, hits 32 for the Penguins, 21 for Montreal. In the faceoff winning category, the Penguins edged them 29 to 23. Giveaways, and this is the big one right here. The giveaways. 11 giveaways for the Penguins, 4 for Montreal. Takeaways 5 aside. Power play, once again, abysmal, 0 for 2. Obviously, Montreal 1 for 2. Penalty minutes 4 aside. You know, the one thing that really struck me as odd for this game, very odd, and this is what's misleading about stats. If you look at the stats as far as hits, 32 to 21, you think, wow, you know, the Penguins must have been really working the body last week. And they really weren't. I didn't. And for Montreal to play a below up-tempo game was a little strange for me, too. But I want to go to one thing. Those takeaways, the giveaways. The giveaways, you cannot give up the puck 11 times against one of the best teams in the league and expect to win a game. However, it's how the Penguins started this game that I think is more of an indicator of other issues. We saw this last season, and one of the things that we saw last season, all through, probably from December on, this team had a hard time getting up for big games. We saw them not get up to play Montreal. We saw them not get up to play Philadelphia, Buffalo, et cetera, et cetera. And the thing is that you have to be in this league, take every game like it's a playoff game. And for whatever reason, this team, I don't know, it's probably the system. It's probably the way the players feel. But you cannot start a game flat. And you've got to come out and use the body. And this is the thing that this team just does not do. I said it back in June. Take away the grit and you remove it and you try to become an early 1990 Russian star-filled Boston Bruins team, you're going to lose an awful lot of games. The same thing with New Jersey. When you play that style, especially out west, you're going to get killed. But I think they started off really slow out of the gate. They certainly had a hell of a time getting the puck out of their own end. But for me, it's the start of that game. Your thoughts?
You have to start out of the gate immediately on fire and keep it going for a full 60. 11 giveaways, that is inexcusable in any way, shape, or form. It's inexcusable in any game. If you're going to sit there, folks, and tell me that we're going to have, say, 11 giveaways against, let's say, the Rangers. Oh, but we had 11 giveaways. It's no big deal. You go up against any team in this division with 11 giveaways, you're inviting them to beat you, whether it be on home ice or opposition ice. And to that point, we should be lucky that Montreal wasn't on their full game last night. Because if they were on their full game, it would not have been a one-goal game. It would have been a hell of a lot worse.
I think you're right. And I think also, you know, Fleury is still giving up goals on that shorthand side. How many times are we going to see that? Now, before anybody jumps me and says, oh, here he goes, he's going to blame Fleury. I'm not, because I think he's the only reason why we haven't been blown out of about every game we've been in, because the defense has been that atrocious. However, when you let in one goal at least per game on that short side, what does it take for Mike Bales, the goalie coach, to tell Flower, hug that post? He hugs that post. Three of the last goals that have been scored against the Penguins don't go in the net. Screams, there's only so much you can do. But at the end of the day, he's got to be better on that short side. Now, there's so many things to talk about that game, but I wanted to kind of move on to one other thing. And it's this is not easy to talk about because it's, you know, being 0-3, you want the Penguins to be a lot better. And you also don't want to give up on them out of the gate. And one of the things that we saw specifically all over our board was fire Mike Johnston. He's an idiot. Blank stare. I said it myself. I don't think the guy's – I think he's a smart coach, but I think he's way too passive, and I don't think he has control over his team. I think that's obvious with Malkin screaming on the bench. However, what people are forgetting to talk about in the dialogue of this team is they want to point the finger at Mike Johnston. But you can't just do that without pointing it at Jim Rutherford. And that's a big, big issue. And here's my point, and I'll let you – give your take, because I know you have quite an intriguing take on this. Mike Johnston is given whatever he's given by Jim Rutherford. Do I think that Kessel's the only addition that Johnston wanted? Probably not. Was that the only guy we could have afforded? Probably not. But the problem was, is Jim Rutherford is sort of addressing it the way he did last season, and that didn't work. You don't replace Paul Martin on the back end. That's a problem. You want the youth movement, but you don't bring in enough youth with experience. And that's a big problem. But when it comes down to Johnston and Rutherford, the fall guy is always going to be Johnston in this situation. Because the first thing Rutherford's going to say is, well, I gave you Phil Kessel. You make the lines. You make the line decisions. And we're getting killed. And we're not winning games. So on one hand, Johnston has to take blame for the system. He has to take the blame for not changing things on the fly. He has to take the blame for honestly thinking that it's going to benefit the Penguins with Daniel Sprong on that fourth line. He is going to take the blame because he thinks Perron is a first liner. He's going to take that heat because Chris Kunitz is on that first line. So as much as I want to blame Johnston entirely, you really can't. This is as much Rutherford's doing as Johnston. Now, you bring in players. I give you four players, Dan, and I spend all the money in the cap. You're the coach. Your job is to put these guys together, and accordingly, they're NHL players, so they're going to play well, you hope. And if they don't, from one night to the next, you're going to change the lines. Mike Johnston doesn't seem to understand that, or he just thinks that, once again, and this is the rhetoric coming out of Pittsburgh, especially from your captain, Sidney Crosby, we're getting better. It's going to take some time. I'm a full believer in that, but I'm not a believer in if you don't change the lines, you're going to get that much better very quick. Thoughts?
Okay. I'm a patient type guy. However, this is the same thing that we went through last year. Actually, the year before that under Bylsma, you know, where things would not get changed. And I think there was one line change from the game against Arizona to the game last night against Montreal. But it really didn't matter. Kunitz is not a top liner. He's not a top line forward anymore. It's enough line changes and combinations. Do you really think that Mata is going to be able to produce with joy? No, he won't. Do you think that Scuderi's going to be of any use? No. Do you really think that the magic could come back between Kunitz, Tapuy when he comes back, and Crosby? As much as I love those guys, no. Kunitz at best is second, but more than likely third line potential. And eventually, you have to let go of nostalgia. Okay? What I mean by that is, if you're going to have senior players on your team that are a part of your past, eventually, you have to put them in spots where they're going to be more productive. Okay? I'm not knocking Kunitz personally. I just know that he's no longer a top-line forward. He doesn't have the speed that he had three, 4, or 5 years ago. The same thing goes with Dupuis. He doesn't have the speed that he had 5 years ago. The same thing goes with Rob Scuderi. Same thing with Lovejoy. Their speed isn't there. Look at Plotkinoff. He's having his own share of issues transitioning from the KHL to the NHL. When you look at, you know, when you look at Bo Bennett, he got his first goal last night. Not bad. Same thing with Kessel when he got the first goal for the Penguins the entire season against Arizona. It was a giveaway that he took advantage of. He broke away from the pack, hit a hell of a shot. Like, what we're being told in the press is, relax, this takes time, etc. But yet, what type of practice was called yesterday? Well, we're not going to go there yet. But in order to build consistency, you have to know who works well with who. And if you can't work with the notion of player A and player B should work better together than what's up there right now, and you can't make those adjustments, you're going to end up going. And as far as Rutherford goes, he'll come out and he'll tell Mike, I gave you the players that you said you needed. So in the end, Mike could very well be the scapegoat.
And I think ultimately that's what's going to end up happening. I just, there's not going to be enough excuses, especially if this team loses a bunch of games. We're going to go to a quick break, and we'll be right back.
The story you're about to see is true. The names have been changed to protect the innocent.
And we're back here on Penn's blog post. Sorry about the loud Dragnet theme song there. But take a round off the Johnson and Rutherford thing. You know, Rutherford does his job, which I don't think he's passed at. I don't think that's an acceptable job that he's done this far, but it is what it is. But Johnson, as a coach at this point, has to take that to the next level. If Plotkinoff cannot play on the second line, he made the adjustment and put him on the third. And that third line of Bonino, Bennett, and Plotkinoff has worked. But then he doesn't touch the first line. He doesn't touch second line. At some point, at one point, we saw Malkin with Crosby and Kessel. It's like he's got to be able to find out what's going to work. And that's a situation where you're on a power play, those guys go together. And so I just don't, it's not that I don't buy that he's not a good coach. I just think his system's passive, and we're going to get more into that. And the one thing I want to talk about now is line changes among us. And it kind of goes into what we were just talking about of, you have to make credible decisions when you're putting guys together. If Crosby and Kessel are not having chemistry, then you remove one of them. You add somebody. You don't just keep going with it and hope it works. And that's one of the things that we saw all last season. They continued to go with Winnick. They continued to go with Spaulding. They moved Downey from the first to the third to the fourth to the second, and it just didn't work. The longer he keeps this up, the less opportunity. You can't build chemistry if you're not willing to try different things to build it. And that's the problem that the Penguins have. Defensively, same issue. You're going to put a guy like Auemata with Ben
Lovejoy.
You're going to put him with Lovejoy. Lovejoy's horrible. Scuderi is horrible. Mata doesn't look anywhere near the type of player he was last season. You know, you have Letang's going to play well with whoever he plays well with, but I could make an argument that Letang probably shouldn't be with Cole. And the reason why I'm making that argument now is because if Cole is struggling with Letang and Mata's struggling, why don't you make that switch? Put Cole down on the second, throw Mata up on the first, sort of balance it out a little bit. But he's not doing that. And I want to go to something we saw last night in the game because I thought it was funny. There was one point where there was a play where Plotkinoff, I think, got pulled down. Rick Tocchet had to explain to Mike Johnston what was going on. when you're standing on that bench, if you, and I know that you have a lot of stuff going on, there's a lot to look, a lot to analyze, and et cetera, if you have to be just explained what happened, your head is either not in the game, you're not paying attention, or you have no idea what to do. And that's a big, big, big problem.
You know, I'm going to throw a correlation at you real quick, Jeff, if I may. Remember when Tockett was getting really in, you know, trying to explain what the heck's going on out there, and Johnson had the dazed look? All I kept on thinking while we were watching the game together last night was, why is it that Tockett has to literally flag this guy down and tell him, graphically probably, what the heck's going on here? I mean, Johnston was a good coach in where he came from in the past. However, it's different between where he came from and the NHL. He came from the WHL in Portland, which is juniors. It's different when you're coaching juniors than it is when you're coaching professionals. Just like it's different if he had coached in juniors, then moved to the ECHL or the AHL. Totally different schematic. Now, Tockett had every right to be upset. But the expression on his face was like, do something, damn it! Change something up, this is not working. All you had was the deer caught in headlights look. You know, like this, look.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I remember looking at Jeff's face last night. It was like, will this guy ever learn? Because we can talk back and forth all night about changing lines and changing defensive pairings in Fleury's weekend to that point. His weak side to that point. But at the end of the day, Johnston has to make these proper adjustments, no matter what. I mean, this is a coaching thing. And yes, to an extent, it is a management thing. But if you can't coach or get through to your players what needs to be done, then things have got to change.
I agree with you. And I think that this has been, and this kind of leads us to another topic that originally was sort of on our slate here. But if anybody has an opinion, seriously, go ahead and give us a call in at 323-642-1216. We'd be glad to hear from you. If you just want to tell us we're idiots, or you want to agree with us, or you want to share your opinion, go for it. 323-642-1216. You can also visit us on www.pensblogpost.com. And you can reach us over on Facebook under the group settings at pensblogpost. Here's something that we've got to be careful with how we talk. People are going to get pissed off. Now, you heard at the top of the show about Alex Ovechkin not going to practice. The Penguins last season had, I believe, somewhere over 50 optional practices, and we saw the end results of that. In three games, the Penguins have had one canceled practice and one optional. Now, here's my question, and it's more of a blanketed statement. If your team is 0-2, why is there even an option? Earn that. When you start winning games, that's when you can have a day off. And I understand when you go through the Western swing, you need a day here, you need a day there. But at the end of the day, when your top line of Crosby, Kunitz, Kessel, Bonino doesn't show, and Scuderi doesn't show, those three top guys of Kunitz, Kessel, and Crosby didn't even bother going. Everyone else on the team did, even the guys who aren't playing a regular shift, the guys that are scratched, Clendening and Erickson. They went. Sidney Crosby didn't. Now, this is going to piss a lot of people off, and I mean it when I say it. Sidney Crosby has to start being a leader. I'm not saying he's a bad player. I'm not saying he's a horrible human being. I'm saying you lead by example, and this is the same bullshit the same that he pulled the last three seasons. If Crosby doesn't want to practice, he doesn't practice. Now, if someone wants to call in and try to tell me that, well, he had a great game, you know, so a day off didn't really bother him. He had a great game. He had one shot, two shots, three shots, maybe. Was he dynamic? In parts. Kessel looked like he hadn't skated all week. He was fast. Malkin looked abysmal, but he went to practice. I will never understand why that's the standard that's accepted. Now, that's going to get into a whole another topic of whether Johnson even has a say on this team. And there's something that you posed a question to. I think you posed it to me the other day is, do you think maybe there's a possibility that Crosby's doing this to get Johnson the hell out of Pittsburgh? I mean, he sure as heck got Bylsma out of Pittsburgh. It took him way too long to do it. He got Michelle Therrien out of Pittsburgh almost immediately. Well, not immediately, but, you know. But the point is that this country club atmosphere has to stop. It's one thing if you have 4 games in 5 days and you need a break. I get that. I'm not opposed to a break. When you just start the season and you cancel a practice because guys are tired and they do like a 10 or 15 minute, you know, off-ice kind of deal and then go back to the hotel and go out of the town and see whatever it is to see and eat and et cetera. And then after you get your asses kicked and you don't play well, you give them an optional. Optional means you have the choice. What would it hurt Sidney Crosby that much to just show the fuck up and practice, especially when your team's not gelling? How many times last year did we sit on the radio and I would say this? You want to gel. How you gel is you practice together. Nobody has to go hard. Nobody has to do wind sprints. You show up, you skate around for 25, 30 minutes, get to know each other a little better, play with each other a little bit more. I know Jack would disagree with that, and that's fine. But at some point, that's got to stop. And if it doesn't stop, they are on pace. What did I figure? They were on pace to have over 170 optional skates this season, the way the rate they're going now. It's got to stop. Crosby has got to put it in a notch and go play hockey. If he doesn't want to do that, then take away the C. I would be a fan of that. That's fine. But you can't do that. You can't do that because you know the ramifications of that. That's an ego blow there. You want to stroke Crosby's ego? All you got to do is tell him to score, let him score, and celebrate him as a scorer and a leader. But I'm going to be honest. I find him not to be really that much of a leader these days. That's just my opinion. You want to call in and scream at us about that, 323-642-1216. We got a call. We are going to go on the air. You're on the air. Who are we talking to?
Rowley Dahmer from the Penn's Log Post page.
Hi, how you doing?
Good. So I wanted to comment about how the Penguins have been playing recently.
Go for it.
So basically what I wanted to say was, yeah, I kind of agree with what you say about Sidney Crosby, but I think the reason why the Penguins haven't been playing as well is because Crosby, Malkin, Letang, and Fleury, they all have their cups and they're all making money. They don't seem to have the will to want to play anymore.
Strong point.
Very strong point there, sir.
And along with that, what you said about mixing up the lines, I agree as well. The third line that they made with Plotnikov, Bolt, Bonino, and Bennett, that line played really well. And I do think they should try to mix up more lines just like that. I think when Dupuis and Fair come back, though, that it will really make the team stronger.
Very, very good. And I'd like to also add, you know, to that, you know, if they mix things up, it shows that, hey, we're trying to make adjustments here. But you just don't do that, my friend.
I have a question. How long do you think it's going to be? How many losses do you think this team is going to have to go through, especially considering if they keep playing in the same sort of fashion? How long is it going to be before Rutherford says, okay, Mike, you've got to start winning games or you're out of Pittsburgh?
Like I said to my friend earlier today in school, I think that if you don't take both of Ottawa and Toronto games that are coming up, I do think that Johnson will start feeling the pressure. As to when he'll be fired, I think if they reach 10 losses and don't at least get 3 or 4 wins, at least get back on the board, I think that he'll be gone.
Yeah, fully agree with that one. I have a second question for you, if I may.
Okay.
How long do you think Rutherford could be on the hot seat?
Well, I think for Rutherford, if halfway through the season we're close to a playoff spot or in one, I think he's okay. But if they keep on going the way they are right now, I do think he'll feel the heat after Johnson's gone, but that's going to be a bit after he's gone. But if the Penguins fail to make the playoffs and all, then I have a feeling that he'll really be on the hot seat and he'll have to have a strong start next season. Because he's brought in Kessel, he's brought in all these depth players. He's been a really good general manager for us so far. So I think he'll get more time than Ray Shiro got when he got on the hot seat.
Very, very well said. Thanks for calling in tonight, though. Really well done. Glad to have you on board.
Thank you. Bye.
And there you have it. I think that was our buddy Rohit.
Yeah.
In Toronto. So that's he's a good guy on our board, and he's going to be writing some articles for us, I think. And you know what? I don't know how old this kid is, but I want to tell you what he knows hockey. I would be the first person to say if someone wasn't bright. But what strikes me is that he knows the game and he knows the Penguins. He sees the roadmap for what it is. And I think that's why I love Penguins fans. We have some of the most intelligent fans on our site. Now, I know there's probably some that aren't. But anytime you can talk to somebody and they sort of understand the climate that's going on. I think he's right. I think if the Penguins are either in or out of a playoff spot and it's very close, you're going to see a lot of moves then. And I think he's right. I think if the Penguins lose to Ottawa or Toronto or both, then you're really going to see some problems because then it's just not, well, Kessel's not playing well. Crosby's not, But thank you for calling in. That was I think, one of the better calls I think that we've ever had on the radio. Your thoughts, Dan?
Okay, I've been talking to Jeff about this for a better part of the day off and on. As when I think the news or the hot seat really hits Mike. I think it's getting warmer as we speak. And I agree with our caller, actually. I agree with Rohit that if they lose to Ottawa tomorrow night and then Saturday night they lose to Toronto, that's going to be 0-5. And then you have games, I believe, against Florida and Dallas to wrap up the homestand, five-game homestand over console. This team has to figure out a way between coaching and players and how to win some games pretty quickly because ownership and management are not going to put up with losing for too much longer.
No, I agree with you, and I don't think they will, and I don't think 0-3 is a horrible, horrible start. It's happened before. But I think once you start looking at why you're losing, and that's so important. You can lose by 6 goals, and that's one thing. Maybe you just don't show up for a night. But it's how you lose games. Unfortunately, it's going to be the catalyst, for a lot of this. And as far as the optionals go, when Sidney Crosby came into the league, we've talked about this before, how he was given the assistant captain position very early and then elevated to captain, obviously. I don't have a problem with that so much. And maybe Rohit was right. Maybe they've won a cup. Maybe it's not so much that they don't care, they're not going to try. But when you've lived the glory like that, maybe it just gets to the point where you're going through the motions rather than just... It's so difficult because hockey's one of those things. And to give you a little background on me, it doesn't matter to me whether you're playing pro or you're playing Olympic hockey, which I did. Or you're playing college hockey, which I did. Playing something as simple as beer league hockey. Beer league hockey, you want to win, and you never stop caring about winning. So I don't think that's necessarily maybe what Crosby's problem is, but I think at some point you go through the motions. Let's look at it. Mkhitaryan, gone. Wylsma, won with a very, very, very good Mkhitaryan team. Wylsma starts to fade, gone. bring in Mike Johnston. It's a very passive system. And first of all, and this is another thing you're not going to hear anywhere else, Johnston has taken Sidney Crosby and made him a defensive player. Sidney Crosby's not a defensive player. Sidney Crosby at one point was an offensive juggernaut. Sorry about that. It looks like we had a little technical difficulty here at PvP Studios. It's been known to happen. If anybody tried to call in and we didn't get to you, please try to call us back at 323-642-1216. The last thing we were talking about was Sidney Crosby. And the point I was trying to make was that Mike Johnston has made Sidney Crosby into a very two-way defensive-minded player, the emphasis being on team defense first. And with a guy like Crosby, you can't do that. The stats may not defend the fact that he's a defensive player, but Corsi does point to the fact that he has, by history, played some defensive stuff. However, at the end of the day, like I said, when you take Crosby and you try to make him defensive, it's going to have its problems. And I think that's one of the things we're seeing. So I don't think it's necessarily that Crosby doesn't care. It's just, I think he's just a different player.
You know, when he first came out and when he first started doing playoff runs in his career leading up to the Cup, as Jeff alluded to, he's the guy you would want to have plucked to the stick with the game on the line to get into overtime or game on the line to get into net or to seal the deal. Crosby was that guy. And this new system, if you want to call it that, from Johnston, has really taken that and put it aside. And it's somewhat disturbing. It's a good way of putting it because his numbers are actually down when it comes to goals. Yes, the assists are there. But his goals year by year, after the concussion in 2011/ brain injury, have repeatedly gone down. And that goes from Bylsma into Johnson. And no longer is he this big, humongous scoring threat that, oh God, he's going to get the puck with 20 seconds left. You know, this is going to finish it. You know, he's going to, you know, force this game into overtime. He's no longer that threat. Yes, he's going to give you a certain amount of goals per season. But the last second ones, the ones that make the highlight reel, to force a game into overtime, those were just not seen.
No, I mean, he didn't have a brain injury, just for the record. I don't want people thinking there was no brain injury at all. Just a concussion. And I also don't agree with you, because I don't think that he's not dynamic. I think he is. I just think he's in a lull. He's been in a lull for a couple seasons. I don't think it has much to do with the injury. I think that the only thing the injury did was it kept him from certain parts of the ice, and that's probably just smarter playing by him. I still think he can score those monster goals. We just haven't seen it in a while, and I think that's what's got everybody nervous, is that you just aren't seeing the dynamic Crosby. And one of the things I want to point out, and it was pointed out on our board the other day, it's not so much that Crosby's awful. He's thinking pass instead of shoot, and that's not Crosby. Crosby's always been a finisher. Malkin the same way, but that's my knock on Malkin. This team looks for a 1-2-3, bang, 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 and in the net. And that just doesn't work anymore. And so they've got to find a way to do that. Now, how do you fix it? How do you fix it? Obviously, you fix it by changing the lines. You change it by bringing in guys that complement and contrast rather than, I mean, look, Cullen's 80, he was 89% in the faceoff circle. Phenomenal work. That's what he's here for. He's not going to be here to score big goals. He's going to be here to help on the penalty kill. He's going to be here to help in the face-off circles. But a guy like Bonino, I just haven't seen anything from him. I don't. His face-offs, he was around, I think, 60%, which is great. But, I mean, at this point, why do we get rid of Brandon Sutter? I mean, granted, I didn't want to pay that guy any more money than we had to, but we knew we'd get 25 goals out of him. Maybe not 25 goals, maybe 25 points. But that's my point, is that the guys that were brought in aren't necessarily going to fix the bleeding. Because this is a team that is essentially bleeding. We're just trying to wrap wrap the gauze around to stop the bleeding. And that's what's been going on for 2 years. How do we fix it? I think you fix it through trades. And I think that's the most realistic. Now, a lot of people will say, well, what do you mean? First of all, David Perron is not a first-line winger, okay? He was third line in Edmonton, and that's an Edmonton team that hasn't made the playoffs in I don't know how long, okay? So you bring in David Perron. He has a little success, but nothing really to write home about. That's a guy, especially making $4.5 million with his bonus. I think he's around 4.8. That's a guy you have to look at moving. Pascal Dupuis is a guy you have to look at moving. Although, you know my personal feelings on that. I probably would not make that decision. Chris Kunitz is a guy I move. I think that this team that we see now is definitely not going to be the team that we see past All-Star break. I do think Jim Rutherford will move beforehand, and I don't think it's indicative of being 0-3 or even 0-4 or 0-5 if it gets that bad. These moves were going to come way beforehand. It's just the emphasis gets pushed up a little higher when you're not playing well. If you want to call in, 323-642-1216.
Jeff has a very strong point about trades and when they take place. This team will not, we said last year that this team was not going to be the same this year. And it's very much different in some areas. Did we want, you know, to pay Sutter X amount of money to be a third-line center? No, we didn't. Just like in Carolina, right now they're paying Jordan Staal an absurd amount of money to be a third-line center. So who's going to get moved? Despite how I feel about Dupuis, and Jeff knows how I feel about the guy, he's probably going to get moved. The same thing with Kunitz. Because at the end of the day, it's not personal. You have to set aside your personal feelings about player A, player B, or player C. You do what's best for your team when it comes to the depth and scoring and defense when it comes to your team. Because hockey is a business in that aspect. You have to sit back. You have to analyze who would be a good fit and who would you have to trade to make it go and work out in the long-term aspect of things and not so much short-term. The catch about Perron and some other players is that they were short-term fixes, but they were never meant to be on the top stage with the top line. That's very important to point out. Isn't Downey like on the first line in Arizona, something like that? If I'm not mistaken, Jeff? Jeff's nodding yes. In Pittsburgh, he's not a top line center. But in Arizona, as bad as they are, and as much as they're rebuilding right now, he is a top line forward at this point. But the point being is, you've got to bring in players that are going to complement all four lines. Kessel is top six. Plotkinoff, we know he's not top six. We know Kessel's not top six. We know Dupuis's not top six. We know Perron's not top six. We definitely know that Bennett's not top six. You've got to make sensible trade moves. And if this team goes, say, 1-6, 1-7, you could see some moves being made very quickly and very swiftly, all incumbent on how things shake out in the next couple of games.
I think it's going to be longer than that. And the reason why I say that is, first of all, the market is incredibly thin right now, especially with certain players and salaries aside. The other problem the Penguins have is we haven't seen Fair play yet. And Fair is going to be one of those guys that can plug in on the second and third line. Most likely, probably third. Which what that enables you to do is to move somebody like a Bonino and slide him down to the fourth to give you a little more punch on that fourth line. However, these are what-ifs, and the Penguins don't have time to figure out what the what-ifs are. Now, I like David Perron, but let's be honest. He's not playing well, okay? Last season, he had a hard time fitting in. He looks like he's trying to be a physical player now, and it's just not working for him. Let's remember that David Perron played on a third line in a very bad Edmonton team. He's also making an awful lot of money for a guy sitting on that third line, fourth. Patrick Hornquist, is the exception to that rule, as far as I'm concerned, because he's a good player. He plays those gritty areas of the ice. And I remember that guy, Ron Klatt, used to say all the time, Perron will play the dirty parts. Well, he did. Now he won't. So, in a bigger issue, and I think this is going to cause some problems down the line, and this is a big one. They brought in Sergei Plotkinov for Evgeny Malkin. I'm the general manager. That's not a move I make. Not only do I not make the move because the guy has never played in the NHL, but if I'm going to give Malkin a winger, I'm going to give him a winger that's going to score 30 goals a season. Phil Kessel was supposed to have been brought in for Malkin, and somehow, some stretch of bullshit, he's ended up with Crosby. So once again, what we've seen is this. We have seen Malkin ignored. Remember that big speech that Jim Rutherford gave last summer? In the summer, we've really got to get that winger for Malkin. So they go out and get Perron. Didn't work. They go out and get Hornquist. Not bad. Okay? But now we have a problem because Plotkinov, obviously, I think he's okay. But he's not a top six. He's bottom six. Easily bottom six. And going forward, is that going to be a guy that's going to help Malkin? Because if you look down and play together, maybe they have a pass here and there in a period that looks, but he's not the answer. So the question becomes, what does Rutherford do? And I think I have a solution. Would you like to hear? Okay. My solution would be that you're going to get rid of Chris Kunitz. Nostalgia aside, you can keep Dupuis if you want, but you got to move Kunitz. You got to get rid of Scuderi. You need to add a winger, and you need to add a defenseman. Defenseman's got to come in, and it's got to be a guy that has some experience. You got to go out and get a winger that you know is going to put the puck in the net. Because right now, it's looking like that second line is going to have a lot of problems. And I don't care if it's only three games into the season. It should be a little bit more dynamic on that second line, as far as I'm concerned. I could be wrong. What do you got for a game break? Anything?
Yeah. Ew.
All right.
There's been a lead change in Columbus at the end of the second period in Columbus. Ottawa is now leading 4-3 over the Blue Jackets, and Wednesday night rivalry in Philadelphia at the end of one, it is knotted at 0. And that's what's going on at this point.
All right. Should be interesting. I'd really like to see Philadelphia win the game. You know, I never thought I would say this, but three games into the season, Philadelphia is better than us. Toronto is better than us. And I know what people are saying. No, Toronto sucks. What does Toronto have? A point? Yeah, okay, Toronto has a point. We don't have any. So Toronto is better than us right now. I think this is a situation. I honest to God think this is a situation. The Penguins will recover from. I don't think that... There are fat slobs in Pittsburgh named Mark Madden. And I said I wasn't going to do this, but I'm going to do this. This guy seems to think that Penguins fans are just jumping ship and overreacting to everything because, you know, they're 0-3. I'm not overreacting because they're 0-3. I could give a shit less. I could care if they're 0-5. That's fine, but as long as they're playing well. And there's some consistency there. That's not what my problem is. My problem is the way they're losing, the way they're starting, the way they're playing in the middle part of the game. They're just not playing well. They're just absolutely not playing well. So rather than sit here and say, well, let's freak out, I'm not freaking out. I just don't like what I see. Do I think they're going to go 0-7, 0-8? Possible, but I doubt it. Because I think at some point, the will to win has got to outlast the will of saying, all right, we'll just get better. Because frankly, I'm tired of hearing Crosby say that. Every game, it's, well, we're getting a little better. And this is what this is. I'm a big guy of words, and Crosby uses a couple of words: puck possession, control. But one thing you never hear him say, well, and he also uses say a lot, but he never admonishes anybody. It's never. It's always we've got to be better. It's almost like political talking points on a pulpit. Vote for me, I'll do this and I'll do that. Well, you know, at some point it's got to be your will to win has to be more than your will to just make excuses.
Right on, sir, right on. The one thing Matt needs to understand is, yes, fans are upset right now. But they have the right to be upset. Why? Some of the very fans that we mentioned in the previous show off the Penguins website that were frustrated likely would love to go to a game, but right now the product isn't worth the money to have gas, night out, game tickets, etc. It's just not there. So the fans are not overreacting. They're not jumping ship. They're not saying, bye. No, they aren't. Not at all, sir. They are not overreacting, and they're not jumping ship. Now, as far as what Jeff just mentioned just now, I don't think they're going to go 0-8. Eventually, they're going to win a game. Kind of hoping it's tomorrow, or better yet, Saturday. You know, win both of those games, you're 2-3. Because eventually the will to win is going to take over. But Crosby in the excuses is the same thing that we've heard time and time again. I think the one thing that Joy has done is late last season, or may have been the postseason, he said, we don't have a reason to celebrate. We all played badly. You know, he said, he admitted it. The team did not show up, and we've got to be better. It's one thing to sit there and say, you know, we need to do this and do that. But I would love for Crosby to come out, if things don't go well tomorrow night, and say, we need to be better. Because one of the signs of a true leader, no matter what sport you're in, is when your team captain will come out and say, you know, we all make mistakes, we need to be better. It's not throwing your teammates under the bus, it's admitting the truth to the fans and to yourselves at the same time. Hey, we need to be better. And it's very important to point out. But I guarantee you that if this team can get their act together on the ice and put together some wins, things will start looking up a little.
They've got to. Things have to look up or this is not going to end well for a lot of different people. And I think that Crosby, you know, so many people say, oh, well, you can't fault him individually. You're right, you can't. But you know what? When team isn't playing well, captains are supposed to take the heat. And it seems like Pittsburgh media, and they've always been like this, they don't challenge him. They don't ask tough questions. They give him questions like, what do you think you need to do better on the power play to convert? And he'll say something like, well, you know, we just need to take our time, get good shots, get them low down on the ice. Puck possession is key, breaking out, being responsible in our own end. Duh, 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 and fucking duh. I mean, that's the way this works. And I just wish there was, I mean, no captain's going to say, well, listen, you know, God, Scuderi on that play looked like he had a camel up his ass. You know, he's not going to say things like that because he's very, if Sidney Crosby is anything, he's very diligent in protecting his team. And I can appreciate that. But a little fucking validity would be nice. A little transparency would be nice. We sucked. See you later. Or, I have nothing more to say, we played horrible, blah, 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 blah. Instead, we keep Miles from Scuderi and Lovejoy, the two worst players in the league. And that's great that Ben Lovejoy has some words like Moses at the end of a game.
Yeah.
But when you're not a factor and you're the contributing factor to one of the problems, I kind of stopped listening to him for a while. I wanted to talk about Daniel Sprong for a minute, because it was something that was brought up by, I think, who brought that up? I don't know. There was a bunch of people that brought this up on the site. I can't remember who exactly it was. But Daniel Sprong has 9 games to kind of figure it out here, and then the Penguins got to make a tough decision. At this point, I think you should send him down to the minors, or to back to his junior club. I said the same thing about Ali Mata, and look what happened. He got hurt twice. He wasn't ready, and that's that. With these kids that are 18 years old, okay, very few of them are ready for prime time. Now, McDavid, obviously, is different than that rule. Eichel, same kind of difference. But Sprong was from the same crop, and a lot of scouts said that they thought Sprong was as good, David and Eichel. Now, we can argue that all day long. We haven't seen it, but Pittsburgh does something that's so notorious with these young players, and it's something that really aggravates me, and it's a bigger problem with the franchise rather than just, you know, say Mike Johnston or Jim Rutherford, is that they bring these young players up, they give them 9 games to figure it out, and then they put them on the fourth line. They did the same thing to Bo Bennett. They sat him on the fourth line, and then when he couldn't figure out because he was playing with a bunch of stiffs, what'd they do? They send him right back to Wilkes-Barre Scranton, or they essentially don't dress him for a number of games. Now, I don't think Bo Bennett was good enough to play for this team last year. This year, a little bit different. Added some weight, seems to not be getting knocked off the puck a little bit. I'm not going to sit there and say that that was the most beautiful Bo Bennett goal I've ever seen. It's a very awkward shot. I'm shocked Price didn't get it. But you know what? It went in the net. That's all that matters. Beauty is not how we judge a goal. It's put it in the net. But with Sprong, they're sitting him on that fourth line, and then they're not giving him a regular shift. It's like every other shift or whatever, every second, fourth line rotation. How can you expect a kid that's 18 years old who had a good camp, how can you expect that kid to be any better or to have any sort of inclination of being able to play at that level when he's stuffed on that line? Sprong is not a fourth liner. Sprong is a second liner. Second liner at the top, third liner minimum. You put him up there with Crosby and Malkin or somebody like that for a game, watch what he does. I guarantee you he'll be a lot better. So you can't take guys like Sprong, expect them to do everything, and then sit them on the fourth line for like 7 games and then send them back to juniors. What have they learned? Instead, what he's going to get is he's going to get a piece of paper from Jim Rutherford that says, okay, we're sending you down back to your junior club. This is what you need to work on this offseason, because this is what we saw that we didn't like. And just once, I'd love to be in that one of those meetings and hear the players say, hey, fat fuck, I was on the fourth line with guys I can outskate and outplay. You put me with stiffs my first 9 games in the NHL. What do you expect? And that's a big, big problem. And I'm going to get on to Bobby Farnham in a minute. That's another issue that I have. But if you want to call in, the phone number is 213. Oh, see, I'm giving you the wrong number there. 323-642-1216. Dan, do you have any comments on Sprong?
If you were to put Sprong into the right line, I guarantee you're going to see a different player than what you're seeing now on the fourth line with a bunch of guys that are basically utility players at best. It's really sad because Sprong had a really pretty decent camp. He really did. And what do we give him for thanks? Hey, you're here for the first couple of games, but we're going to put you on the fourth line. Wow. You know, this is very typical, to say the least. And it's really sad because Sprong has a lot of talent that's screaming to come out. But it goes back to the rule number one of hockey. If you're put on the line and the other two components of your line aren't those who produce, you end up basically not in a good situation.
No, I fully agree with you, and I think that setting him on the fourth line is probably not going to benefit him, at least not in the short run, as it were. But I agree. I just think at this point, if you're not willing to let him play up or you're not willing to change lines, then you almost have to send him back to juniors and give it a run, definitely next season. Now I want to talk about Bobby Farnham for a minute, and the reason why I want to talk about Bobby Farnham is there seems to be this plague running around out there that Bobby Farnham cannot compete at this level and that he's a waste of a roster space. Now, first of all, I totally disagree with that, and I'll tell you why. Bobby Farnham is not going to score goals. Bobby Farnham is a rough-and-tumble player. Bobby Farnham is a spark plug, and that's the kind of guy you need in this lineup. You need a guy who's going to be willing to take the hit and give the hit and provide a spark for a team that is offensively sluggish. And so, from my perspective, when I see that, and I have no problem with Sprong being up because it's a 9-game deal, but when you see a guy like Bonino and he's not doing much, plug in Bobby Farnham for a game. Let him just run around and hit everything that he possibly can, because that's a momentum changer. How many times have we seen Pittsburgh Penguins players that maybe not necessarily were offensive-minded that could come in and throw a huge hit and wake his team the fuck up? That's a guy you need in your lineup. So I have no idea why they're not utilizing him, especially with his speed, especially, and you know what, he was one of the only Penguins after two games that was a plus, not a minus. So that tells me something too, and that's a guy that will also help defend other players. And if you're not going to use the guy, send him back down, because there's no reason to keep him up here if you're not going to let him play. That's a game, last night we could have used Bobby Farnham. Ottawa, that's a game, especially with Neil on the ice, we could use Bobby Farnham. Going into the weekend, Toronto, Bobby Farnham. Past that, Dallas again. Arizona again at some point, Bobby Farnham. I'm not suggesting that Bobby Farnham should take the place of somebody who can provide offense. I'm saying there's nothing wrong with making him an extra forward. Dress your 6D, not 7, at an extra forward. Let him sit there. Use him when you need a jump. And that's a big problem. I don't think that Johnston has any clue when to insert somebody, how to insert somebody, and why he should insert somebody. If you want to call in and talk to us about beautiful Bobby Farnham, you can call us at 323-1216. What do you got to say about beautiful Bobby?
Wow, beautiful Bobby. We're a sweet fan. All right, guys. Midnight Express reference. Look, y'all. It was like this. Beautiful Bobby has been one of my perennial favorites out of the Wilkes-Barre Scranton farm system for quite a while. The guy is a human cannonball. He comes out of the jump. He's quick. He's fast. You need someone to just finish the heck. Tag him out. Put him out on the ice. Boom. There you go. He's going to knock it out. He's not going to score 20, 30, 40 goals a season. What he brings is something that Jeff knows I love in a player, and that, my friend, is grit.
You know what? I think we're going to end early tonight. You know why we're going to end early? Because I'm tired of talking about the Penguins' woes. I'm tired of talking about the Penguins' problems. Here's the deal. Penguins are 0-3. We got games coming up against Ottawa and Toronto. Both are at home. It's going to be interesting to see how Kessel does with Toronto. These are must-win games. I hate to say that. I agree with Rohit. I think if they drop both of these games, both of them, there's going to be trouble in paradise for the Penguins. I like their chances more against Toronto than I do Ottawa. But then again, I don't know what's left to say, other than the fact that the Penguins have got to get it together, and there's lots of problems, and it's not something you solve in three games. It's not something you solve in five. It's just something that comes with time, with gelling, and just with wanting to win more than lose. And for the Penguins, the time is now. I love the Penguins. You know this. But I also am speaking from the point of a former player. There is nothing worse than losing. There's nothing worse than losing on home ice. And it's okay if you lose 3-1, but you had better have given your best for a full 60 minutes. You leave it all out on the ice. And when you don't do that, and this team hasn't done that in three games, they haven't left it all out there. If they did that, you won't get a complaint out of me. But at the end of the day, this is all about wins and losses. And they're not starting off on the right foot. God willing, hopefully they'll get there. before I let Dan take his last take here, I wanted to say a couple things. If you are a fan of hockey commentary, Jack Mullay, I always say mullet, but the Jack Mullay Hockey Show on YouTube, type in Jack Mullay Hockey Show, check out some of his videos. He's so smart. Somehow I know him from somewhere, and I don't know where, and I'm still trying to figure that out because we must have crossed paths sometime. At some point, you know, but he's a really smart guy. He pimps out a lot of our stuff, so the least we can do is pimp out his stuff. He does a great radio show himself. He does great videos that are completely hilarious and interactive. Good, solid dude. We also wanted to say to Heather Gaughan, please feel better. We know you're a little bit under the weather with some health stuff going on. You should be fine, and I hope Kennedy's happy. Because I don't know how Toronto was doing. I think last we checked, I don't know if they're winning or losing. But Kennedy's a big fan of Penn's blog post. So is Ron Korber and Rick Porter and Rohit. And there's just so many people out there that support what we do, and we can appreciate it. How was the final score?
6-3.
All right, so Toronto Blue Jays win tonight, 6-3. And on you go from there. So Kennedy must be drinking a glass of Merlot this evening, watching his cat Scone watch TV. I think that's one reason. That's what Kennedy does. You got any final words?
Yeah, I do, actually. I am one of the, you know, I'm a big fan of the Penguins. I have been ever since I was a kid. Always have been, always will be. Yes, I speak from the perspective of the fan. When I say that, things need to improve. Yes, I speak from the perspective of the business aspect when I say that people are not overreacting. They want to have their money's worth. However, these two games are going to be very, very important. And I don't think win number one is going to happen against Ottawa, but I will make a prediction right here, right now. The first win, if all else fails, is Saturday night in console against the Leafs.
Sounds good to me, sir. Sounds good to me. They need a win. They need a win. I don't think there's any other way about it. So, if you're listening, and in case you missed the Johnston commercial and the Crosby commercial, we're going to go ahead and play that again for you. Here's the Sidney Crosby commercial.
How would you like to play professional hockey? How would you like to play for the Pittsburgh Penguins? Would you like to make seven figures? Would you like to be like Sidney Crosby? How would you like to just not go to practice whenever you didn't feel like you needed to? If that's for you, go to www.nhl.com/Pittsburgh Penguins and fill out an application to be the newest member of your Pittsburgh Penguins hockey team.
And I say that because he doesn't like to go to optionals. Some would call that unfair, but it is what it is. So we're going to go ahead and end with the Mike Johnstonator facial reconstruction surgery so you too can have that blank stare on your face for 60 minutes of great NHL hockey. As usual, we wanted to thank everybody for listening in. I got to thank my sponsors because I keep forgetting to do that. Bauer, CCM, the Mario Lemieux Foundation, Molson Canadian, Labatt Blue, Hockey Fights Cancer, and Gloves Off for Goons, which is my personal charity. Thanks, everybody, for listening in, and we will see you probably sooner than you'd like us to be seen.
Have you ever wanted to coach in the NHL? Have you ever wanted to be Mike Johnston? Well, here at the Mike Johnston Plastic Surgery Center for Facial Reconstruction, you too can also have that blank stare on your face throughout 60 minutes of great NHL hockey. For all services and needs, contact 412-634-4444 and ask to get the Johnstonator.
What do you think?